The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Underestimate the power of PlayStation. Beyond.
Beyond.
Welcome, my friends, to Podcast Beyond, episode 216. And welcome once again to the Fireside Chats.
Ooh, Fireside Chats 3. Ooh,
Fireside Chats 3, in which the two members of the IGN PlayStation team, including myself, Ryan Clements, and the one and only, he only does everything, Colin Moriarty.
Beyond.
We talk about PlayStation, we answer your questions, and we basically fill space for Greg Miller, who is not here right now. He is already enjoying his gobble-gobble holiday.
In Chicago, Illinois.
In Chicago. So
The home of Family Matters.
Why not?
Perfect Strangers.
Yeah, there you go. Man, you have so many good references to pop culture. I can barely keep up.
Holy jeez. All right.
So, Colin, how you feeling today, man?
I'm tired.
It's been a busy couple of days.
It is. It's tiring without Greg here.
Absolutely. But we've been trying our best. You really just picked up all of the slack yesterday with your cranking out, what, 8 stories?
Yeah.
Just publishing them.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Publishing them on IGN.com.
Some new Vita announcements, etc., and so on. So
meanwhile, I stared at a blank Word document for 2 hours just trying to figure out what to write. But
you need an inspiration.
As you will see, excuse me, as you will see, my review for Where Is My Heart, I think, turned out very well.
Yeah, I got to read that after the podcast.
Yeah, there's no rush. There's no rush here.
Just kind of do it.
Yeah. So if you are new to the Podcast Beyond family, welcome. What we basically do here is talk PlayStation, and we are going to, what do you think? Should we start with what once was, what is now, and will forever be the Roper Report?
Time for some news.
Yeah, let's get all the semantics out of the way,
yeah,
so we can settle in.
Yeah, I wanna lean back. By the way, I wanna tell the listeners I did want to buy us a 6-pack so we can have a nice comfortable drink here, but you weren't really feeling the drinking today, so.
No, it's maybe a little early and my stomach hurts. So
yeah, maybe another time.
I'm sure, there'll be another time.
Take me away, Colin.
Yeah, let's just do this real quick. There are 12 items on the list, and I didn't write this verbose text that I usually do, so we can just get right to
reading.
Yeah,
we want to get right into the questions.
Number one, Yakuza 5 has been confirmed as a PS3 exclusive. The game's plot will connect to Yakuza 4 and take place in various Japanese towns. Not too surprising on any account.
Not too surprising. No.
Number two.
And Kazuma is the lead character.
Yes,
confirmed.
Number two, new Beyond Good and Evil 2 art and details have emerged. I wrote a story about that yesterday, thanks to Naomi Kyle for translating the entire French website that I cited.
Yep.
That was her editorial debut.
Beautiful.
Anxious about that game. I think Ubi themselves have said that game will not be on this generation of consoles, though. Number three, Rayman 3 Hoodlum Havoc, which originally came out on PS2 in 2003, is coming to PlayStation Network. That's cool. Number four, Final Fantasy 13 2 has gone gold in Japan. Excellent. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, that'll be cool. I'm definitely excited to play through that all the way.
I heard it's only 30 to 40 hours long, according to the director of the game.
Well, for the main quest, sure. But that's certainly going to... I think that time will probably bump up a little bit with the side quests.
Certainly. Jak and Daxter Collection, which we revealed a couple weeks ago due to some advanced ratings at the German game board, is real. It's coming to PlayStation 3 exclusively and will be out in February. PS3 gamers who didn't get their promised copy of Battlefield 1943 with Battlefield 3 have filed a class action lawsuit against EA. Good for them. Number seven, Kojima told the official PlayStation magazine that he, quote, has to make, end quote, Metal Gear Solid 5, but he has, quote, no idea, end quote, what the game will actually be. So thank you for that, Mr. Kojima.
Thank you, Kojima-san.
Number eight, a new Skyrim patch will be coming the week after Thanksgiving, hopefully fixing many of the problems found in the game, especially with PS3. That's cool. That's exciting. We actually just ran a piece about, we polled our readers over the weekend.
Right. You polled.
Yes, I polled them and asked them what was happening with their system, and the results are on IGN right now.
Quick interjection.
Yes, because
it's a conversational podcast. Mm-hmm. What I'm really hoping for is that they address some of the exploits as well as the glitches, because exploits technically aren't glitches, they're just ways to sort of get around.
What do you mean with like leveling and stuff?
Yeah,
like
leveling exploits. And the only reason I'm like that is because when I see someone that has a level 100 everything maxed out character, I'd like to think, oh, they invested this huge amount of time into the game, as opposed to, oh, they just cheated for 20 minutes and then got that way.
Yeah.
To me, it almost takes away from the feeling of journeying all this way and like really growing, as you put it the other day, organically. Which is really important for a game of that size and of that scope. And there are just these people cheating away, and that just kind of bugs me a little bit.
Yeah, I think it is a little lame. Some people do want to play like that. I don't really hold it against them, but...
Yeah, I mean, they're not hurting anybody.
Yeah, but like the sneak skill, like for instance, like you can build that up in no time at all just by going into someone's house when they're sleeping and just walking into the... You know, crouching down and walking into the wall, and your sneak will just skyrocket if you do that. And that's lame, and I don't want to play like that either, and I don't, because like you said, we discussed this the other day in the office, which was when my guy's sneaking around, like really sneaking around, I like to think he's getting better and better at it, and like, you know, I'm growing into that role of becoming a little more sneaky, as it were. And there's other exploits. I think you can exploit a lot of spells to build like your spellcasting stats and stuff like that. I don't really know, because I'm not a spellcaster in
there's
the game.
There's a book you can read also that just levels up all your stats to like 100.
Yeah, see,
you can just read it over and over again. I'm like, okay, so then you're just ruining the game for
yourself.
Yeah,
well, I don't get that. That's stupid.
I don't get it at all.
Number nine, new Killzone is in development. Not surprising, a little disappointing actually. I'd like to see what else Guerrilla can do. But there's rumors swirling that Sony first party is working on PlayStation 4 already, a PlayStation 4 game, and people are wondering if Guerrilla is working on Killzone 4 for the PS4. So we'll see.
Interesting.
Number 10, an old Amiga game called Putty Squad is coming to PlayStation Vita, so that might excite people. Unit 13 is coming to PlayStation Vita. That's number 11. Mm-hmm. That's from Zipper Interactive, and one of our Podcast Beyond alumni, I believe, is working on the game.
Yep.
Jeremy. Two. Roper.
Well, yeah,
as well.
Technically two, yeah.
Dunham and Roper, so good for them. That's exciting. And number 12, a new MotorStorm game from Evolution is coming. MotorStorm RC, that's for the PlayStation Vita and the PSN, and that will support cross-game functionality, and you will only have to buy it once, and then you will have both copies of the game, so that's exciting.
That's awesome. Also, in case you couldn't tell by the RC moniker, you're actually driving remote-control cars, which is totally rad.
Yeah, it's cool.
Looked really neat.
Reminds me of RC Pro-Am on the NES, am I right?
Sure.
So that's it. That's it for the Roper Report.
Excellent.
Very brief.
Thank you for that, Colin. Mm-hmm. Now, are there any other? Shall we do maybe the games list and get that done as well?
Let's finish up our official business for today. Let's just get it all over with. The official IGN list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Tekken Hybrid, The King of Fighters 13, mm-hmm. WWE 12,
got it,
and Cartoon Network Punch Time Explosion. So all fighting games.
Wait, really? Yeah. Holy crap.
On PSN, I did this for Ryan today, just so we can get right into it.
Yes, thank you, Colin.
No problem. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I downloaded it. I haven't really started playing it yet.
You're excited for that one, aren't
you?
Yeah,
I am.
You're just gonna hole up this holiday and just get Who Wants to Be a Millionaire trophies.
Fucking A. Learning with the Puyus, is that how you say it?
Why not?
Okay, that's like a children's game. Episode 2, that's out. And then digital versions of Ratchet and Clank All for One and Modern Warfare 1 are out as well. On PSP, you can download NBA 2K12 and Corpse Party, which looks really cool.
Started playing that last night.
The game looks neat.
It's so weird. It's cool. I mean, it's such an interesting... I mean, I never really thought like, oh, let's play a horror game in an 8, you know, or 16-bit. Format.
It sounds neat.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then Minis Where Is My Heart is out for everyone this week,
which you can find the review IGN review today.
Indeed. The old SNK joint Akari Warriors 2 is out for as a PlayStation Mini, and Psycho Soldier PlayStation Mini is out. And then notable DLC, Disgaea 4 got some DLC.
Nice. Damon will be happy.
Yeah, Arkham City got some DLC. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 got DLC. And there's a bunch of discounts, especially for PlayStation Plus members, get 50% off games like Limbo and Outland and some other Gatling Gears and stuff. So there's a lot of good stuff out there for you this weekend.
Beautiful. By the way, I mean, I'm sure people will be able to tell, but we are indeed recording this on Wednesday, day before Thanksgiving.
Indeed.
Here
indeed.
In
are we going to put it up tomorrow or are we just going to put it up today?
I was just going to put it up today. Give it to them early.
For
why
shits
not?
And giggles,
yeah,
I say.
Absolutely. Now, generally speaking, I think we're ready to go right into questions.
Jump
am
in.
I right? Okay. So if you would like to join the Podcast Beyond discussion, you are always welcome to email us. Send it to beyond@ign.com. It's so easy. Starting with...
It's too easy.
We make it too easy for you. So easy, my junk mail folder collects a lot of your mail, and I have to move it manually over to my Beyond folder in my Outlook. Anyway, let's start with a question from Albert, who writes, "Greetings, Ryan and Colin. What are some of your Thanksgiving traditions, if you guys have any? And Colin, is it time to hit the panic button on your New York Jets? Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving, guys. Beyond."
Why don't you take that one, Ryan, for starters?
All right, cool. Thank you. Well, my Thanksgiving traditions when I was younger were obviously to have dinner, like a formal dinner with my family, particularly at my grandmother's house, which was always tons of fun. And I get along really well with my family, so those are good times. But as I am now across the country, on the other side of the country, it's not quite as easy. I usually only fly home for the Christmas holidays. This year, I think I'm just going to spend some time with the lady friend and maybe go to dinner with her.
Very and nice. You're going to go to dinner?
Well, we're going to one of her colleagues' houses for dinner.
What are you bringing?
I don't know yet. I think Neethi is cooking dessert or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yes, yes. What about... I can't really answer about the New York Jets. Is it time to hit the panic button on them?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, they're 5-5, not looking very good. Play the Bills on Sunday. That's a must-win game for both of those teams, so that should be an interesting game. They're still in good shape. If they win out and maybe only lose one, maybe two more games, they might make the playoffs, but two games is pushing it. That would be 9-7. They really need to be 10-6.
Got it. Remember, this is a video game podcast, yes. Folks.
My traditions have changed over time.
Yeah.
When my grandparents were still alive, we would all congregate on Long Island and have dinner there. Since they passed away and stuff, that's kind of changed. In college, a lot of my family actually transplanted to Virginia.
Interesting.
My dad is the only one really left on Long Island, along with like much of my aunts, my uncles, my cousins are all on Long Island still too. But my immediate family all lives basically in Virginia. My two sisters live there with their families, and my mom lives there as well. So teaching and advising at a university there. So now they just do their thing there. My brother lives in Philadelphia, so you know I think he goes and hangs out with them. Mm. And I just kind of stay here. My friend Kevin that I went to Northeastern with, we've had Thanksgiving the last 3 years, I think, together. It's kind of just like whoever's around kind of thing. So I'm making some garlic mashed potatoes tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. You put those potatoes on the oven.
And then I'm gonna go to his house and drink and watch football.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
What a holiday.
It is. It's a hell of a holiday. Thanksgiving's a hell of a thing,
It's great. I'll tell you what. All right, let's move on to an actual video game question. This is also from, I think this is from a different Albert. This is from Albert Hsu, who writes, "Dear Colin and Ryan, Beyond. What are your most anticipated games of 2012 and why? And then a second question, which we can get to later, is, do you believe that the PS3 is coming up at the end of its life cycle, or is that 10-year plan still in play?"
That's a good question.
Mm-mm.
Why don't you begin?
My most anticipated game of 2012 is easily, and unfortunately not a PlayStation 3 game, Diablo 3, followed pretty closely by Guild Wars 2. And then I would say the actual PlayStation game I'm super pumped about is... is Gravity Rush.
Yeah.
Gravity Days.
Yeah, Gravity Days.
But Gravity Rush is its American or English title. And I'm also, and I always keep forgetting about Mass Effect, too. Mm-hmm. How could I forget about Mass Effect?
How could you forget about it?
See, because I originally played through those games on the 360, I sort of still envision them as 360 games, even though now they're multi-platform. And I will probably play that on 360 because that's where my character is.
Yeah, yeah. But, that makes sense.
Yeah. How about you, buddy?
There's a lot of them, you know? I mean, obviously, Mass Effect 3 is going to be, you know, really exciting to play, and that comes out somewhat soon. I think Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, I've spent a lot of time with that game and written about it pretty extensively, and I think that game's really exciting.
I'm excited about that, too.
I think that game looks really cool. And then, I mean, in terms of PS3 exclusives, I guess there are three in particular that I'm really excited about. I'm excited about Sly 4.
Okay.
I want to see what Sanzaro can do. That game looks really cool.
Definitely.
And hopefully we'll be playing and see more
boy,
of it.
Is that where our boy Ninja XYZ?
Yeah, yeah, he works there. You know, props to them because that game at the very least looks really good. And when we saw it at E3 and they played it, it looked like it played like a Sly game, and that's really exciting. And I'm interested to see what those guys can do and what kind of reception they get. I think Dust514 looks really cool. Mm-hmm. It sounds even better, and if that game is executed the way it should be and could be, then that might be one of the most ambitious games ever made. And,
absolutely.
And like no holds barred, like one of the most ambitious games ever made. And I think that game sounds really cool. Whether or not it comes out as intended is another thing entirely, because the architecture of that game is super complicated. And if people don't know, that game is tied intimately into EVE Online, which is an MMO on PC. And the events in the two games should interact with each other and actually affect each other. So that sounds really cool. Yeah. And then finally, I'm really excited about The Last Guardian. I'm surprised you didn't say anything about that.
We know that game's never coming out.
Yeah, I mean, if that game ever comes out, I assume it'll come out fall, you know, maybe this time next year.
I mean, I hope it's next year, man. Could you imagine if it wasn't until like early 2013?
No, I couldn't imagine because I don't know what the hell they're doing over there. I don't even know how the game's taken this long to begin with.
They're making great games.
They are, and that's great. But I'm much like Gran Turismo 5, not that I'm a racing fan and not that I spent any time with that game, but I know that one of the things that killed that game with a lot of people and made it, you know, a great game instead of like this outrageous, like, you know, event was how long it took and like, yeah, how the time it took in making that game just totally chipped away and eroded at the excitement level and like the prestige of the game almost. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, The Last Guardian, by, you know, from all intents and purposes, has been in development for 5-6 years.
Yeah.
So I don't
not the first game that's taken that long.
No, certainly not. But I just don't understand how it can take so long. And like, they had these original targets of releasing the game and it wasn't ready, and that's not a good sign. So I you know, and the same thing with Gran Turismo. Gran Turismo was supposed to come out many different times and didn't. So I don't know. I don't know what that means, but I'm anxious about that game, not necessarily to play it in a vacuum, but to see like if it's actually as good as it has the potential to be. And then, of course, Clements, all the Vita games that are coming out.
I mean, that's why I threw in Gravity Rush, just because that's what I'm most excited for. But man, those launch titles. Oh, it's gonna be killer.
Yeah, Escape Plan's gonna be awesome.
It's just gonna be delightful.
I mean, like I said a few beyonds ago, and I know you agree with me. We've played Vita so much now that I'm so anxious for other people to just play it.
I know.
I want you guys to see how good it is and become a believer, because there's plenty to rave about with the Vita. Not only about how it looks and how it feels and how the games look and feel, but those analog sticks and the trophies and the art, you know, the PSN architecture on it and stuff like that. I guess the Vita game I'm most excited about is Escape Plan, but Resistance Burning Skies is certainly a close second.
It's gonna be killer.
Yeah,
gonna be killer.
No doubt.
And then to answer Albert's other question, I would say in order to predict the life cycle of the PS3, we need only look to how Sony handled the PS2. It will still exist. Games will still come out for it, but the focus will shift to whatever console they're pushing the hardest. Right?
Agreed. Yeah, I don't think we're going to see anything about PlayStation 4 in 2012. I think in 2013, maybe they'll show PlayStation 4.
Announce. All right.
At E3 or TGS, and then
I think E3. I think they do it at E3.
E3. And then if they do it at E3, then maybe 2014 fall the system comes out. Yeah. But I think I don't know.
Man, that's a ways away. So you don't think they're going to do like an announcement at E3 next year?
No,
really?
I think that would be a huge mistake on their part, to be honest. Because PS3s are starting to sell and the price is right, and people are getting in on
that's
the Blu-ray and stuff like that. And I don't think they want to interrupt this flow, as it were, that they kind of have developed with PS3 for the first time. Not that it's selling in North America, you know, in great numbers, but it certainly worldwide is selling more than the competition. And I think they have a good thing going with PS3.
They got a good thing going.
I mean, if it was up to me, like, I'd have all the first party devs do another round of PS3 games, you know, and then in 2015 or something, be like, here's the PS4, you know, and I don't see the rush. The PS3 is still very powerful. How much better is it really going to get than this?
I know.
Exactly. I don't really get it.
No, it's not. I mean, honestly, the leap between PS3 and PS4 will not be the same leap we saw with 2 and 3.
No way.
I mean, it's not where I don't even know if I like our programming tech isn't there yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't
it'll
see
be,
it.
It'll be like a more subtle improvement, which is will still be appreciated. But
yeah, I think it'll be a matter of like RAM and how games run and how big they are and how quick everything loads and stuff like that. And that'll be cool. The other thing I would take pause at, Clements, is that what seems to be really important with Vita is PS3 connectivity. Mm. And you don't want to interrupt that either as a selling point.
Yeah.
Because I keep saying, and I'll say it again, Vita and PS3 will be bundled together. I'm calling it. They will be bundled together. They'll sell them for, you know, with a couple games, maybe for $500 or something like that. And like that's going to be what's important. And maybe Vita will talk to PS4 too.
I've never heard you make that prediction.
Oh, we've said it a few times, I think,
really?
On the podcast in the past. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe I've been zoned out or thinking about K-pop.
Yeah, probably.
Man.
But yeah.
No, that would be cool.
I think that's going to be the big selling point. So.
All right. Excellent. We have a few non-video game related questions, so let me just see what this one is. Let's do another quick holiday question, because it is in the holidays.
Okay.
This is from Jason, who writes, since the holiday season is here, I was wondering what some of your favorite Christmas-themed films are. Growing up in the Midwest, I was always partial to A Christmas Story, etc., etc. Thanks for the years of entertainment. Can't wait to make it out to San Fran and meet you all. This is from Jason. Chris, do you have like any holiday movies that you like?
I mean, it's going to sound funny and almost a little corny, but my favorite holiday movie is Home Alone.
Yeah.
Like hardcore. I think Home Alone
is
like, Home Alone is really like by itself. Obviously, like they got out of control with the sequel, which wasn't terrible, but then like the third one, and there's more of them, I think, in that. But Home Alone 1 is a funny movie.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just a good movie. It's well made and it's, you know, I think it's cool. It's always on like TBS or something around this time of year, and I always watch it. I just think it's a kind of a funny flick, and kind of a screwed up movie too. At the same time, like his parents leave him home, and then they do it again. It's like Jesus.
They're the worst parents ever.
I don't know, it's awesome.
I'm obviously partial to. I actually have really fond memories of Bad Santa now. Because of watching it with IGN alumni David Clayman and Eric Brudvig. That was, and actually, current IGN resident Charles Onyet. That was one of like the best holiday experiences I've ever had. We got hot cocoa. We put that like peppermint schnapps or whatever you like, whatever alcohol you can mix with hot cocoa, and it goes really well. Maybe it was like a Bailey's kind of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Something, I don't know. Anyway, they it tasted delicious, and it
I
was
bet.
Bad Santa. And that's where yeah came from. All right. So, here's one from Titty T. Hello, friends. This is Mike, a.k.a. the crazy guy from Comic-Con that I met both Greg and Colin. And he also says, hi, Ryan. Anyway, here's my question. Would you agree or disagree? I feel most of the Xbox community are immature, while most of the PSN community is not. Not being biased against Xbox, I'm just saying there are a lot of assholes out there. And also, once more, Beyond. This is from Mike. What do you think about the two different communities?
No, I don't think that at all. I mean, I think that part of what contributes to what like the more cesspool culture of Xbox Live, frankly, is that the system is speaking to each other is more prevalent on Xbox. Like just playing online is more prevalent. I think when you give people access to headsets and the online features are just more robust on a system, that you're just going to find more assholes. You know,
yep.
And I think it would be the same way on PS3 if people
bundled
didn't have
it with an easy to plug in.
Yeah, if people could somehow figure out how to connect the Bluetooth headset to the PlayStation 3, I think it would be much easier than that. I keep saying I love PS3 more because people don't talk to each other in games and like they leave each other alone, and that's true. I've never really had any bad experiences. Plus, IGN is in my name, and you would think that would like draw some ire of people, but it, you know, people that don't like us or you know just want to hate or whatever. But that doesn't happen. And I played Home. You know, like the last two games I played extensively online were Homefront.
Mm-hmm.
And Fear 3. I love those games online. And no one ever gave me a hard time. Very few people talk. If they do, I just mute them. I don't want to hear anyone talk. The only game online I ever played that like people really like to talk is like, were like the Killzone games.
Yeah.
And people love talking on Killzone games. And I just mute them there too.
See, I like talking if you're actually talking strategy. And that's obviously, like, that was so critical in some of the online games that I used to play, like Halo Wars back in the day with, once again, David Klayman and Eric Brodvig. Yeah, and I would agree with that. Oh, did something just fall? No, the cord just changed. All right. Yeah, I mean, I would say that the gaming community is just a mix of people across all platforms. You're going to find genuinely great people in games. You're going to find total idiots. That's just how it is.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I don't think it has anything to do with platform. I think it has to do with accessibility. It's like with the Wii. I'm sure you'd find just an equivalently douchey group of people if you could talk on the Wii and there were games people were playing. You know what I mean?
Yep,
it's like
absolutely.
I think it's just getting. It's like the internet. You just get a bunch of people together in a place, and it's inevitably going to turn to shit.
It's just going to get fucking vulgar, like you and I do. Yeah. All right, let's do one from Preston from Dallas, Texas. Preston writes, "These are quick fires. Okay. You ready, Cal?
Yeah."
Let's do you first. My brother and I are quite interested in Mega Man, but have not bought any. Owning a PS2, PS3, and PSP, which do you recommend starting with?
If you have a PS2 and you can find it, the Mega Man collection is a really good place to start, because that's one Mega Man 1 through 8 all on there. And if you want to buy it on PSN, you can buy 9 and 10. Just be warned, 1 is really hard. You know, don't
like
be turned,
the original
yeah,
Mega Man.
It's
yes.
really hard. It's definitely the hardest Mega Man game. So, right. And the most unforgiving one.
So probably...
I would go with Mega Man Collection, just work through it.
Why not 9 and 10, though? Because that's the right download
could,
right
to think,
your...
Yeah, you could. I just don't think he'd appreciate... I can't imagine someone's going to appreciate those games. Those games aren't made, in my opinion, for people that didn't play the old Mega Man games. Those are made for people that like were like, wow, this is super nostalgic. I don't think you get the same thing out of Mega Man 9
yeah,
and 10.
Yeah, but they're emulating what was done originally. So if you're playing like the updated emulation, maybe that's like how you get introduced into that old school aesthetic.
Sure, if you want to work your way backwards, I guess. I just, to me, like part of what floored me about 9 and 10, especially 9 when it came out, like 9 I remember, I was like, I couldn't even contain my excitement. I very rarely remember
you like walking aggressively around the office hunting down the box that it came in so that you could download it or whatever.
It's like
so good.
But to me it was like turning it on and being like, I'm a huge Mega Man fan from back in the day, and this is a real Mega Man game. And I just don't know if someone's really going to get punched in the face by it like that if they haven't played the old ones. But to each his own.
I don't know if they will regardless, because they don't have the 10, you know, however 10 year gap. Well, actually, no, I'm sorry.
No,
how long?
I was 3, 4, 5 when I started playing Mega Man games. So,
all right, so way more than that.
Yeah.
Like 20 year gap. Yeah, exactly. So they don't have that. They won't have that, so it won't be the same for them, which is why I thought.
They won't have that Christmas 1990 when I got Mega Man 3. Ooh, boy.
Oh, buddy. The question for me is, what do I expect to see from Final Fantasy Versus 13? I expect to see something that I've always wanted, which is a Kingdom Hearts style Final Fantasy, like kind of action-oriented game, but it doesn't have all the Disney shit in it. Now, I still love Kingdom Hearts, but if I could get Kingdom Hearts without all the Disney stuff, I'd do that. And that's kind of always how I envision Versus 13. It's like a really dark Kingdom Hearts to me. That's
sounds
like
good.
Kind of how I picture it. It also seems like they're definitely going for the more quasi-realistic approach, where you know the city that they occupy is very much like kind of a semi-futuristic Tokyo, and it's not completely crazy and floating in the air and there's like cyber dragons flying around. This is, you know, like the main character is driving in like a really nice car, you know, down the highway, and it's really great. You should watch it if you haven't seen some of those trailers that have come out recently. You should check those
what's
out.
What's the ETA on that game? So a ways out, right?
Yeah, that's a ways. I mean, that's still completely unconfirmed. It's still in development.
Sounds like it's gonna get canceled.
Oh my, if they did, that would be the biggest mistake they've ever made, more than Final Fantasy 14. Yeah, I mean, I would say that the reason is that Square Enix often splits up their efforts so much across a bunch of different games that's why they take so long. And that's kind of how I perceive it. Then the question for Greg was, what is your choice for Game of the Year? But Greg's not here. So Greg's choice for Game of the Year is probably, I assume he seems very strongly towards Uncharted 3.
Yeah.
So let's guess that he would be picking Uncharted 3.
If it wasn't Uncharted 3, it would definitely be Naughty Bear.
Naughty Bear, right. Just a high quality game.
Yeah.
All around.
One of the best.
No problems.
The best, Jerry, the best.
So this is from, let's see, Schwinn. my question is this. If you could choose one feature or change for the PS4 to have, what would it be and why?
For me, it would be, I would like the idea of a Vita-like system in which every game had to be available digitally. Even I don't think it's time yet. We've said this before. I don't think it's time to go solid state yet. I think you're isolated. I think it's you're isolating a lot of people in the country and in the world that don't have access to internet, high speed internet. I think people are making a huge mistake when they talk so confidently about the solid state future happening right around the corner. I think you're greatly mistaken. But that option, like with Vita, like where the game has to be available digitally, is a great idea, and that's the step. That's the next step towards the solid state future, which will happen in two generations, not one. So that's what I would want with PS4.
All right.
Yeah,
I think that because they would be building from the ground up, most likely, I would love to see a refined, like cross media bar experience, something that loads faster. It's a little more intuitive. It doesn't. You can do more system features from within the game. I still don't understand why, in order for me to switch the sound output on my PS3, like say, so I have it digital audio, so it's going through my headphones, and then someone walks by and they're like, "Oh, can I like watch?" And I, you know, I'm like, "Well, you can't hear it because it's going through digital, and I would have to like turn it on to HDMI so it comes out of my TV speakers."
And then I have to turn the game off.
Yeah, so I have to quit the game. I mean, like that stuff has never made any sense to me. And if they're starting from scratch, they really need to have a much more polished like system menu experience, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm of two minds with that. And the first thing is that I don't think cross media bar as it is bad.
I think it's far beyond what
Xbox is in terms of being able to navigate. I think in terms of navigation, it stomps Xbox.
Yeah.
But in terms of features, obviously Xbox stomps PlayStation.
Right.
And I mean, it was confirmed, I think, not too long ago that like we can't have cross media or we can't have cross game chat. Like it's not possible.
Right.
Well, you know, like things like that. And that doesn't bother me at all. But I know that bothers some people or whatever. And certain things do confuse me about messaging and syncing trophies and having to quit out of your game to do anything, basically. Yeah. You know, like you have to quit to like install a Bluetooth headset. You have to quit if you're like with the audio problems or whatever. And that kind of shit is annoying.
It's very annoying. Very disruptive to a gaming experience.
But like I don't, when people like kind of draw a blanket statement, which is very common about how cross media bar just sucks, I'm like, go play with an Xbox and try to figure out what you're doing on it, you know?
Figure it out.
Obviously, when you get into the meat of what the Xbox experience is, there's so many things to do. And obviously, it's going to become more second nature to you the more you use it. But, you know, I think they can learn a great deal from Xbox in terms of Xbox 360, in terms of the online experience and
absolutely
and stuff like that. I still say online PSN will always be free. I don't think that's ever going to change. But I think Xbox can learn a great deal from PlayStation in terms of a navigation system that works. You know?
Yeah,
because cross-media bar does take a minute to render sometimes and stuff like that. But like it's easy. Like you're just moving around and finding all these things. I think it's like very intuitive in a way.
Oh, yeah. It's organized well. It's the speed. I'm more talking about speed and functionality, which could really at this point only change through a complete overhaul. They can't really go back and like just completely. I mean, I guess they could, but then it would require this massive system update. And
yeah, we definitely want another one of those.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let us move on to. Let's see here. I guess we'll do this question. This is from John, who writes, "Hi, Colin and Ryan. Short, sweet, and to the point. But are annualized franchises bad for bad for gaming? Call of Duty obviously being the main or worst perpetrator of this. Now there's also talk of Final Fantasy heading in the same direction with a 1 to 2 year turnover for new games, a trend for any franchise that I'm not a fan of." Beyond. From John.
What do you think?
This is a tough call, man. I don't like the idea of a game sort of coming out for the sake of coming out on that year. That but at the same time, when you say, is it bad for gaming? I don't know. I mean, it makes money, so is that good for the gaming industry? You know what I mean? There's a lot of different ways I think you could look at this. I personally would prefer that games just come out when they come out and developers take their time, because that usually means a better product. And I mean, just look at like how the Madden series has oftentimes been very iterative as opposed to completely, you know, starting from scratch.
I think the Madden series is a good place to jump off with this, because I think people are finally getting really tired of Madden, and the only reason that, you know, EA gets away with Madden really, and like how you know it doesn't change and it doesn't run exceptionally well and stuff like that, and is that they basically have the license to the NFL. So like making a football game without the NFL license is suicide. You wouldn't do it. And companies have done it, and it hasn't sold well. And it's kind of a shame in that sense, too, because the game that EA does, like the NHL series, is like really, really good. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it's bad. Like you said, like the games sell, and that's good for the industry.
Right.
I get a little disappointed that companies are less willing to take risks because gamers are less willing to buy those random games that come out. The you know, games like Bayonetta, which, you know, is still sitting on my shelf, frankly. I know you really love it. Or Vanquish, which is like an amazing game. Vanquish is amazing. You know, or, you know, I get really mad when I think about a studio, which I always talk about and people make fun of me, Raven, just because, you know, they made Singularity and they made Wolfenstein and those games didn't sell well. And now they're, you know, they worked on Modern Warfare 3. Now they're on Modern Warfare Duty, you know? And it's like, that sucks because those guys tried to make games that were good. They were good and people didn't buy them, you know? So I think we have to, if we don't want something like that, I think we have to kind of speak with our wallets a little bit more and support the games that are good, that come out that are new and different. I mean, that's what I keep saying about even Arkham City. Like, that game's cool and I really like it, but I want to see what that studio does. I want to see them do something else. I even say that about Naughty Dog. It's like, Uncharted 3 is an awesome game, but like, what else can you do now? You know, like, do something else. I understand that the bottom line is money and they want to make money, and Uncharted 3 is going to sell millions of copies. Uncharted 4 will sell even more, and obviously that's the bottom line. But, you know, you take risks like Sega did with Vanquish, and Vanquish sold really well. You know, Vanquish did really well. So it's possible to find lesser success if you set your expectations lower and then build it from there, I think.
And the thing is that one thing we all have to keep in mind when you say vote with your wallet and find those games and support them that are, like, kind of not well known, not, you know, maybe not as polished as, like, you know, a Modern Warfare 3. I just spit on the keyboard. Sorry, computer. Is that Call of Duty, Uncharted, all these franchises started somewhere. They also were once original IPs that were risks, that were chances. And, you know, I think that there's always that chance that a game might take off. And, yeah, that's why I always get excited for new IPs. I mean, that's why I'm so excited for Ni No Kuni, because it's this new thing.
Ni
No Na Na. So, yeah, that's
it's a good question, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to me, it's just, you know, I don't know. I think about a series that, like, I'm not even excited about, like Assassin's Creed, and like we're seeing a game like that like every year. You know, it's like, come on.
The funny thing is my excitement to play an Assassin's Creed game, I missed the first one, right? And then when the second one came out and everybody was like, this one's way better, it's an awesome game, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally feeling this, and I didn't quite get to it. It was like on my shelf. I was ready to go. And then Brotherhood came out. And then like Revelations is coming out.
And they're making another one next year.
And they're making another one. It's like, it's too much. I lost it.
They're killing it.
I mean, and now I'll feel like I'll never be able to catch up. There's no point. Now I'm just probably never going to play an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah,
they killed it for me.
That's what I mean. I missed the first one, too. I played the second one for a couple hours. I'm like, this game is not good. Like, for, you know, in my opinion, like, this game is weird and boring.
But a lot of people really like it.
No, I understand that. But to me, it's like, so whenever, you know, and I just gave up after that. So whenever I see that series, like, getting just iteration after iteration, it's like, you know, if these games are really as good as everyone thinks they are, then let's see something else. You know, that team is certainly capable of doing something else. I don't know. I get disappointed with, I like sequels as much as the next guy, you know, for great games. And I want another Infamous, and I would love to see more Resistance and stuff. But at the same time, like, you can't help but wonder what some of these studios are capable of. And if you really think back to old, you know, the older times in gaming, like, sequelitis was not nearly this pronounced, you know. And even when sequels were produced, some of these games were radically different than the game that came before. And
Zelda 2,
Castlevania 2, Mario 2, which is technically not a Mario game, but like the mentality behind sequels back then was not the same as it is now.
Yeah.
You know, the real Mario 2 sequel is more Mario, you know, but the Mario 2 sequel they gave us that everyone loved was a radically different game. And the same thing with Castlevania 2, which was basically an RPG. And the same thing with Zelda 2, which was, you know, top down and then side scroller and dungeon crawling and all this stuff. It was totally different. So maybe not in the dungeon crawling, but
yeah,
just I feel like that. I think people are getting frustrated because they're getting the same shit over and over again. And I say, if you don't want the same shit over and over again, then don't buy it.
Don't buy it, yeah. Buy something else. Buy Catherine. Buy Ni No Kuni when it comes out.
Mm-hmm,
which,
mm-hmm.
By the way, as Colin and I have said once again, and I just want to drill this into everybody's heads, all right? So can we talk about the news item that you and I just were kind of flabbergasted by right before we came in
here?
Sure. So, by the way, how those sales numbers that you and I were talking about, how was that a month?
I think it was a week.
That was a week?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. So, but that, again, don't quote us on the duration of these sales numbers. But presumably, a week in Japan recently, the numbers came out, and Call of Duty: Modern Warfare 3 completely outsold Ni No Kuni and this other, was it a DS game? That was Gigant something.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I was just looking at those two games.
Ni No Kuni. So, and Call of Duty was like in like the 170,000.
It was like 183,000 or something, yeah, something to 66,000 or something.
Ni No Kuni. Now, guys, you people listening, if you like Modern Warfare 3 and that's really your game, awesome. You know, that's fine. So I'm not telling you not to support the games that you love. But remember, there are other games out there worth people's attention. And if you guys are all kind of still interested in JRPGs, I think Colin and I can both safely say that Ni No Kuni will probably be the next and perhaps last greatest JRPG. I mean, that game's going to... I just have such high expectations for that game.
In the more recent spirit of, like, Eternal Sonata and
exactly,
stuff like that.
Exactly. And if you really want to see something that, you know, proves that Japan still has a fucking knack for RPGs and, you know, doing it their own way, that's definitely a game that you should support when that, because that is confirmed for the West.
And since we're talking about this, Clements, I mean, it's worth noting, too, and I say this over and over again, and I noted about it, you know, when I was disappointed when we did Podcast Beyond Live at Comic-Con was... How few people, you know, when I ask people who bought Sideway New York, who bought Rochard, and like no one, you know, yeah. It's like that to me is, I'm actually starting to get bothered about how few people are playing PSN games and how many great games are on PSN and how you get so much bang for your buck on PSN compared to some of these games. You're going and buying Modern Warfare 3. That's awesome. And if you, and like Clement said, if you like it, that's great. I haven't played it yet. I'm sure the campaign's fantastic. I've never had a problem with the Call of Duty campaign. I just don't really understand its popularity.
Right.
But man, when I think about you getting a 5-hour campaign out of that, you know, Rochard is longer than that. It's like $10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sideway New York is a great 5-hour sit down weekend game. You know, and people aren't playing these games. People aren't playing Alien Zombie Megadeth. People aren't really playing Outland. People aren't playing From Dust. People aren't, you know, there's so many awesome PSN games, and people need to start paying more attention to that, because I'm telling you, developers are going to start getting scared about putting their games on PSN. We're not going to get exclusives anymore. We're not going to get these indie games anymore if people don't start buying them. You know, for every Super Stardust and Shatter that sell really well, and those are the cream of the crop, no doubt about it. You know, there are under the radar games that are worth your time and worth an investment and worth a look. And, you know, something like Max in the Magic Market, which isn't like an amazing game, but that's a cool game. That's a nice, fun sit down and play game. Just give those games more of a chance. Not everything has to come out of a case, you know?
So here's what you can do to support the Podcast Beyond community and also, more importantly, the PlayStation world. All right. If you, over the holidays, if you get a little extra money or you want to buy something on sale, go and tell your friends about Ni No Kuni. Tell them, hey, you should totally download Outland or whatever. You know, any PSN game of your choice. Talk about it. Go give it a shot. Download it. Because that's the only way that we can support these games and actually get them, you know, out to more people. Especially, remember, don't ever dismiss the power of just telling your friends that don't listen to Podcast Beyond about games that they should get. So I highly encourage all of you to like go and fucking pre-order Ni No Kuni, because the game's gonna be the shit.
And hey, I'll say this too about Outland specifically, because it is on sale and it was cheap to begin with and it's cheaper now. A, that's from the studio that did Super Stardust and Dead Nation, which are two of the best games on PSN.
Mm-hmm.
And I dare you to play that game and tell me that it's not beautiful, that it's not fun, that it's not atmospheric and ambient, that you didn't have a good time. I dare you to tell me that.
Dare.
Go,
official play. Podcast Beyond Dare.
Outland is like one of those games where I'm like, I can't imagine anyone not liking this game.
So how much is it now? If it's on sale?
It's cheap. I think it's like, for PS Plus members, maybe $6.
Yeah, less than
$7, yeah. No,
less than $10. Oh, yeah. Go and get Outland and have a good holiday weekend playing that. And we dare you to tell Colin it's bad. we dare you.
I double dare you.
Yeah,
I'll
remember,
take the physical challenge.
And everybody, remember, if you're a loving member of the Podcast Beyond family, and we love all of our fans, just, you know, do us a favor, do the PlayStation community a favor, and go talk to your friends more about video games. Because remember, they don't all listen to Podcast Beyond.
And but they should.
There are a lot more PlayStation 3 owners than there are Podcast Beyond fans, and that needs
by
to change.
By only a few million, though.
By a few million. Whew, that was a good little topic right there.
I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Let's do a question from Ryan real quick. Not me. Another Ryan.
You're asking yourself a question?
Not asking myself a question. Ryan writes, you guys have been drunk on some podcasts. Are you actually allowed to drink at work? I develop websites at a call center, and there's no way we'd be allowed to drink while working, though that would be awesome. Keep on rocking the PS3 and tell people to add me on PSN. RCA Studios. That's what Ryan's PSN name is. I will throw that out there for him. RCA Studios. Anyway, Yeah, we're allowed to do. We are allowed, but not allowed. But we're allowed.
I mean,
we're pretty much.
It's not a problem. I mean, when Greg and I got drunk for PlayStation Network coming back, whatever, it was a Saturday.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think it's not a huge problem as long as it doesn't, you know, it doesn't happen like every day or even every month or every 6 months. I mean, it's
a rare thing. And also keep in mind that, I mean, everybody here at IGN is a professional, and we know that, you know, when you do that, you're, you know, you obviously are done with your work. There's a good time for you to have a drink with your colleagues, and there's a bad time. So keep that in mind. We're not trying to be rebels or anything. It's kind of just the culture here at IGN. We know when there's time for work and when there's time for play.
Trust us.
Yes. Let's see. Ah, here's a good good one from our old friend, Rolls-Royce 5.
Okay.
We know Rolls-Royce.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ryan and Colin. Rolls-Royce here with a quick question for you guys that you could also save for when Greg gets back. Let's do it now. Which Uncharted Platinum trophy is the most rewarding, i.e. challenging, in your opinions? I've beaten each one and would like to go back and plat them all, but would like to start with the one that is most difficult and plat them from hardest to easiest. Keep up the great, entertaining work. Colin, I'm going to have to defer to your judgment on this one.
Yeah, I have Platinum in Drake's Fortune and Among Thieves. I don't have the Platinum in Drake's Deception
And yet. According to Greg, you never will.
Whatever.
Yeah, I know.
That's just because I was making fun of him for never getting it. I think Drake's Fortune is by far the hardest Uncharted game, so I would start there. I think the games get progressively easier. I think Uncharted 3 was undoubtedly the easiest game.
Which I still sort of disagree with, but I'll go with you on for now.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion, I mean, maybe someone else has some different guidance. I would just start with Drake's Fortune and get that out of the way, because there are some scenes, including the airplane scene in particular, in the jungle with the crash airplane, that is really hard. Like, really, really, really throw your controller through the window hard. So
please don't throw your controller.
Yeah, don't do that.
Through the window.
But I can't, you know, and Among Thieves had its moments too, but there are only a few things in Drake's Deception I think that are going to frustrate me when I finally get around to doing that. Maybe I'll do it this weekend.
Cool. Hey, Kyle.
Yeah.
What are we going to do for lunch today?
I don't know.
Think about it.
HRD? Was that like a meow?
Know. Yeah, I don't know what that was. That was, sorry. That was, I wanted to go, meh, but it came out really
high-pitched.
I want
to get something quick because I have things to do.
All right, cool. Well, I'll let you, we'll think about it.
Okay.
Let's do one from Brandon, who writes, with a Jak and Daxter HD collection reveal, do you think that a Ratchet and Clank collection is far behind? I think it is very likely as Jak and Ratchet run on the same engine. Is that true? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. Hmm. Two different companies. It's possible.
Are there any series that you guys want an HD collection of?
Onimusha is the collection I want the most. I wrote a piece that was very, very, people got very angry over for some reason. I have no idea why, which was basically just posing the question, is this HD collection deluge, this tsunami, as
mm-hmm.
it were,
mm-hmm.
is it just getting to become too much now? Like, I like going back and playing old games. I like that we get to have trophies on these games and stuff. But, I mean, man, oh, man, there's a lot of collections now. Now, obviously, a studio like Bluepoint is really just focusing on HD-izing games and stuff. And so it's not really taking away assets from anyone. And, in fact, it's making people money, which is nice. But I just wonder, is it becoming too much? So I say that I say that I want Onimusha and I would love a Mega Man collection, you know, with trophies and stuff. You know, I would love those things. I say that with reservation, though, that, you know, I'd prefer to kind of see some new games at this point.
I think I'd also prefer to see new games, but honestly, the playing old games with HD is really, I think, something that I really cherish, because when you try and go back and play some of those old games, I mean, fond memories aside, some of those games, sometimes it's hard to play because they just look fuzzy. It's kind of hard. It's harder to tell on an HD set with SD graphics running. I don't know. I sometimes have I feel like it takes away from it a little bit.
Yeah,
I like going back and strolling down memory lane sometimes.
I think that's only a problem with certain generations of games, though. I think, like, the N64 PlayStation era is the era of games that where games will age the worst. A game like Mario 64 and Zelda Ocarina of Time and Final Fantasy 7 to a degree and some other games, they just look terrible.
I would say that N64 games look a little better than some of those early PlayStation 1 games.
Yeah, early PlayStation 1 games. I mean, if you're talking about like Toshinden or something like that. But I think PlayStation games started to look pretty good. I think Final Fantasy 9 and Chrono Cross and stuff actually look pretty good.
Yeah.
But I agree. But I mean, when you go back and play an NES game or an SNES game, when you play Castlevania or you play, I don't know, Dragon Warrior, or if you, on SNES, you boot up ActRaiser or something like that. Like, those games still look good. Final Fantasy VI still looks really good because it's you know, sprites and you know, it's beautifully, a lot of the stuff's hand drawn and just looks really nice. And I don't know. To me, I I don't know. I'm concerned about the HD collection thing. People are getting really offended by that piece for some reason too, which is, I'm just puzzled by, because it's like, I'm not saying they're bad, or I'm just saying, I'm asking the question, like, is it too much? You know, yeah. Like, how you can't, we got to like start looking forward eventually before we look back. A lot of these are obviously harbingers of new games. Ratchet and Clank collection wouldn't surprise me.
Wouldn't surprise me, but there's nothing, I don't know if there's anything, I don't know if Ratchet and Clank is coming anytime soon, you know? I kind of almost have a feeling that, I almost wish they, as much as I enjoyed All for One, I almost wish it ended on Crack in Time, because that had such a good just ending finale, kind of just the feeling I got at the end of that game. I was like, that could be how I end this, you know, this series, but.
Too fucking bad.
Fair enough.
I will say though that and Daxter, I mean, we heard rumors for a long time, but I would have never guessed that Jack and Daxter was going to come back. So weirder things have happened.
Yeah. Let's do a question from Sam. Let's do this one real quick, just because he sounds like he could really use our help, Cole.
Sure.
All right. Hello, Beyond Crew. I need your help. I'm looking to get into the video game journalism business and had a question for some experts. Clearly, I can't spell or speak. I will have an Associates of Arts degree at the end of this year, and I'm currently working on my own indie video game website. My question is, should I keep trying to get a better degree to up my credentials, or is experience with my website more important? What's your professional opinion on that, Kyle?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that Associate's degrees are fine, but I think that bachelor's degrees are really important at this point. Like, I think you have to have the four-year degree. When someone says they went to college, they mean that they have a four-year degree. Yeah. So I think that those extra 2 years, especially with how rigorous everything gets when you become a junior and a senior, I think it's super important to have that degree. Is it necessary? No, I guess not. But I mean, I don't think that we're hiring at this point, personally at IGN. I can say this. If I was in charge of hiring someone, they would have to have a college degree.
Yeah.
Not because, you know, a person can't be smart or can't be well spoken or write well or whatever, but just because, like, my mom always told me, my mom's an academic and stuff, and I mean, she does these things and she cares about this, but it's going to college, even for something like I did for American history, which is like not really applicable to anything, shows that you can do, like, that you can follow through and finish something and get assignments in and write something and go to class and be accountable and be held accountable and get good grades. And those things are important because they parlay into a sort of, you know, into the workplace. It's like, well, I have this degree doesn't mean that my American history knowledge is going to come in handy. This degree means that, like, I went to a university and graduated.
Yeah.
So it means I'm capable of doing something and I can prove it here. Of course, building websites hugely important. There are great success stories from the past. I'm not sure how prevalent they'll be now, but I mean, certainly, like, a site like GameFAQs was built in a dude's house and he sold it for millions and millions of dollars, you know, years later. So it's possible, and it's possible to get great, you know, to do great without it. But my personal opinion is, keep working on that website, keep doing your thing, but go and get that 4-year degree.
Absolutely. Agree. Let's continue on.
Okay.
This is from Tuerto. Beyond, do you guys think that Final Fantasy Type-0 will come to the United States or become a PS Vita title?
No, and maybe. I don't know.
You don't think it'll come to the States?
No. Not really? Not as a PSP game.
Not as a PSP game?
No.
Oh, dude.
I don't think there's any reason for them to release any more PSP games. No one buys them. Mm-hmm. If they want to, maybe digitally, it'll be available. Yeah. And it would be playable on a Vita.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the option. But don't you think we would have heard something by now? The game's already out.
Yeah, I know. We probably would have. It's really weird that it hasn't.
I don't think it's that weird, Clint. Just because, you know, it is a Final Fantasy game. There is like that group of people that would buy them. You know, but I bet you if you look at... I haven't looked at the sales of Dissidia and even Crisis Core and stuff like that. But I bet you the sales are not good. And it's only going to get worse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see... They have to translate it and localize it and do all those things. I'm not sure, but maybe a Vita release is possible. Yeah, sure.
I would hope so. I mean, that would be a shame, because that, for all intents and purposes, that game looked awesome, and I would really have liked to see it in the States.
We are getting that Final Fantasy rhythm game, though, I think, on 3DS, aren't we?
Hooray. Tuerto also wants to know, have you guys read Ryan's article on Final Fantasy 13 2 Bigger and Better? It's the preview I did recently. I don't think you had a time. You've had time to read it yet, right?
Final Fantasy 13 2, no. I haven't read anything on that in a while.
How about this one? Resistance 3 had a free update, which included 2 new maps. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a mistake for developers not to include trophies with free DLC? Does trophies always have to bundle with priced DLC?
I don't know. I mean, I would like to see trophies on everything, just because I like trophies, A, and B, I think would help sell things. But no, I mean, if they're giving you something for free, you can't like, you know, what do they say? You can't look a gift horse in the mouth, as it were.
Yes, correct.
And I didn't know what that meant until Gaddis explained it to me.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of colloquial phrases that I have completely no idea.
It's fascinating. I had no idea.
For sure. Here's one from who I will just assume is named Skyrim Bob.
Okay, Skyrim Bob.
Hey, guys. How glitchy is Skyrim? Playable? Non-playable? Also, how are the trophies? Fireside chats!
Okay, that's exciting.
That's his email.
How far are you in Skyrim?
I was just goofing around like for the first 10 hours, just wandering around. So I literally just killed my first dragon.
Okay.
Like 15 hours in.
Okay, yeah. You're not that far behind me in terms of time played.
Yeah.
It's certainly playable. It's totally fine.
Totally playable.
The game's frozen on me like 3 or 4 times at very inopportune times. The frame rate is definitely starting to chug now that my save file is getting bigger. There are definitely problems with it.
I would say it's totally playable.
Yeah, it's totally fine. And they're going to patch it after Thanksgiving. And it's like I always say, it's such an ambitious and dense game that it's amazing it runs at all, to be perfectly honest with you.
I was thinking recently, like, because I really know the lay of the land in Whiterun now. Mm. Whiterun, by the way, guys, is the first major town and hall, or hold, as they call it, that you find in Skyrim, that you're supposed to find in order. I like feel really comfortable with Whiterun, and I'm like, okay, you know, I finally got this town mapped out. I know all the people that live and work here. I've done like a lot of the quests here, and I thought there are like fucking 8 other cities like this.
Holds, not there are like so holds. Many towns too.
Yeah, but there are like 8 other massive holds in this game.
Yes, there are.
And I only did one of them, and I've been playing for fucking 15 hours.
In terms of trophies, it's a gettable platinum. I'm gonna totally platinum it. I implore you to go to ps3trophies.org and look at the trophy guide there, though, because there are 2 missable trophies, and you will kill yourself if you miss those trophies, because I certainly would. I have them like all written down on paper to make sure like I don't do anything, like all the quests. Like, there are certain quests where you have to make certain decisions in order to, like...
Uh-huh.
And the word there is that it's 150 to 200 hours of gameplay to get the platinum. So I'm 10% in towards my quest there.
Unbelievable.
Great game, though. Great game.
Well, on the topic of Skyrim, this is from Priscilla.
Okay.
Priscilla writes, I really, really want to buy and play Skyrim. The only thing that's keeping me from doing it is the thought of Skyrim taking over my life and me letting my grades fall. I could let my grades fall, but then that would be the end of my PS3. So, BeyondCast, am I being paranoid about the whole Skyrim taking over my life and go ahead and buy it? Or should I wait till school's out in more or less 3 to 4 months to get it? Thanks, and hope to hear from you guys. Love, Priscilla. Always nice to hear from our female listeners.
My opinion is you gotta have a little self-control with the games, you know? I mean, you can get sucked into any game, any RPG. I remember when Final Fantasy VII came out, like, I really had to restrain myself to, like, you know, I was in 8th grade, I think. I had to really, like, work hard to not play that game all the time. And same thing with Wild Arms or Final Fantasy III when that came, 6, when that, you know, yeah. It was 3 when we've had it. I think it's just, you know, I think you can buy it and play it and just be fine. Just, like, set limits, you know? It is one of those games that will suck your life away if you let it.
Oh, totally.
But, you know, grades are more important.
And it's also, Priscilla, I would like to point out that because it is one of the games where you can save anywhere, it's very easy for you to say, I will play it until, you know, 10 o'clock p.m. And then as soon as you hit 10 o'clock, you just hit the menu button, you save, and you can jump right out. And there's no, you know, you won't feel like you screwed everything up. So
agreed.
But definitely I would like to encourage all the Beyond listeners, schooling and family and whatnot are always more important than video games. Video games are a very important part of my life, but I know where they fall in the grand scheme of things.
Indeed.
Yes. Now, Colin, we've been recording for almost an hour now. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit after noon. Mm-hmm. Do you want... I have a few more, like, sort of residual questions
here. Keep it going. Let's just do it.
Do you want to keep it going?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Let's get all the questions up.
Okay, I don't actually have many of them, though, just
okay.
To let you know.
That's fine.
Let's see. Let's do... Oh, shit. Actually, we actually did kill most of them. Hold on a second. Fill time. All right, that's good enough. Good Phil, Kyle.
Thank you.
So this is from Abdullah Fadel, who writes, hey, Colin and Ryan, what do you guys think of the currently announced PAL Territories first-party Vita launch titles? That was a mouthful. Personally, I think it's quite strong considering the third-party launch titles haven't even been announced yet. Uncharted and Gravity Rush just did it for me. We'll probably pick one up first week of launch. Love the show.
Yeah, I saw that list. I think it's... I don't remember all the games specifically, but I think like Hot Shots Golf's on there, which is going to be pretty cool. Escape Plan's on there, which is going to be fucking awesome. Uncharted is really cool. Gravity Days is obviously really good. We've played that game. We've played all these games, I guess, at this point. Yeah, I think the launch library is really strong, and I think it's a great reason. I think Vita was ready to go, like, in terms of they could have, you know, I think they were waiting for the games to be ready, and I think that's a very smart move. Look at the 3DS. You know, they're, you know, 3DS, you know, like I keep saying, there are certain games that will come out on 3DS. I will eventually buy one. I will have to when they announce Castlevania or something, but if they announce Castlevania, maybe it'll come to Vita. But they're basically more launch games, first-party launch games for Vita than there are worthwhile 3DS games right now.
Yeah.
That's scary.
That's it is ridiculous, and I would I'm inclined to agree with that statement. Though I would like to point out that at some point you have to stop calling it Gravity Days because you will confuse people that are looking for Gravity Days.
I refuse to stop calling it that.
You
love the double entendre. I love it.
I know, and it's great. And I'm saying, and I totally agree with you. It's a great title, but you have these Beyond listeners that'll be like, "Can I have Gravity Days, please?" And they're like, "What the fuck's that?"
Yeah, just to clarify, Gravity Days, DAZE, is the Japanese name of Gravity Rush, which will come out here, and I have no clue. And Ryan and I asked them why they renamed it. I don't think they even knew. Or it was like...
No, they knew. It's because they thought that they felt that Gravity Days sounded more like a puzzle non-action game, whereas Gravity Rush was more action-oriented and aggressive.
Disagree.
Disagree. let's see.
That game's rad, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I can't wait for that game. I'm going to be playing that every night.
Interestingly, that game comes out in early February in Japan, so it's not a launch title for them.
I'm not a huge fan of some of the other questions. Like, they're good questions, but they're a little technical, and I'm afraid I won't be able to answer them.
Okay.
Let's do this one then. So this is from Andrew, who writes, my question to do is with the reduction from 5 download rights on the PSN to 2. I realize this affects a small portion of the population, but do you think Sony should have given gamers an option to keep some of their downloadable rights? My girlfriend, it was her idea, thought Sony would have to, should have given gamers the option to pay a small one-time cost per right, thus allowing them to keep their 5 right limit. What do you guys think? Beyond, love the podcast. Keep up the great work. It's from Andrew. So I think what Andrew means is, like, once you've bought it, then you can re-download it at a small fee, right? I'm assuming that's what his question is.
I assume so.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that kind of sounds cool, but I don't...
That doesn't make any sense, though.
No?
Because if you're going to have this blanket statement where, you know, you can just put your account on anyone's machine and just download the game and pay a small fee, then basically what that means is that you could just... screw the developer, as developers have been screwed with this game sharing thing as it exists now, and just say, oh, well, I bought the game for $10, and then for $2, I can just download it over and over again on anyone's machine. I mean, to me, I'm confused why they ever did this to begin with. You know, and I think the notion was that people would have more than one PS3 in their house. I think that they visualized that PS3 was going to be like this thing in your house, and they talk to each other, and you know. And, you know, to me, it's like people abuse the shit out of that system. And if I was Sony, I would have gotten rid of that system a long time ago, and I would have cut it down to one system, you know? And that if you want to download somewhere else, then if you want it, and if you want to download it somewhere else, then you have to go on and kind of, you know, cancel that download, and it gets removed from your system, and then maybe goes somewhere else. And, you know, it's a complicated thing, but you have to understand that this... You know, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, this affects people like Ryan or me and Greg much more than most other people because we literally have like 4 PS3s each.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, my PS3 at home and then my debug and then, you know, a couple retail units and all these things and the, you know, units we capture sometimes. I have a slim here. I have a fat PS3 here.
I actually do have 4 when I think about it. Well, the one's a debug, but I have 3 currently sort of in my possession or access to 3 of them.
Yeah, so that affects us, you know, a great deal because we download a game here and then we want to play it at home. But, you know, with that said, it's like, you know, you don't have to look very far and very hard on the internet to see how badly people are abusing that system. And it's cost Sony, I'm sure, and the developers, more importantly, a lot of money.
No, so. When you put it like that, I totally agree. And I do want what's best for Sony and the hardworking people that make these games.
Yeah, buy the game.
So,
you know, I'm not saying he's going to use it dishonestly. Obviously not. Maybe him and his girlfriend want to share a game on their PlayStations, and that's fine. That's respectable. But understand that most people are not sharing their games like that.
Yeah. All right, Colin. Well, those were pretty much all the good questions that I had. And I have, do you mind if I do one parting comment from Sam?
Sure.
Sam Alegria, who we know from the Podcast Beyond community. Sam writes us, by the way, the subject of this email was, I love you guys. So Sam writes, I just wanted to thank you guys for all the fun you've provided me over the years. The experiences I've had meeting you guys have been great, to say the least, from talking about how Texas will secede from the U.S. with Colin, having my first ice cream sundae with Ryan, yes, that actually happened, and being slapped in the face by Greg. I think that
also happened.
It's crazy to think a video I've helped make, The World is Saved, has almost 400,000 hits on YouTube. You should go watch The World is Saved
That's
if you guys
impressive.
Haven't already. I wonder what misadventures I'll have with you guys next year. Hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving and a merry fucking Christmas. Screw that. Happy holiday, Jazz. P.S. I've mentioned multiple times that the reason I moved to San Francisco was because of IGN. I can safely say that's something I don't regret at all. That's from Sam Alegria.
Cool.
A great member of the Podcast Beyond community.
Indeed, he is.
So that does it for me. You can obviously come to IGN for all your video gaming needs. You can follow. You can find Podcast Beyond on IGN and also on iTunes every Thursday, and also on Wednesdays when we record today.
Yeah.
So keep up listening. Send us questions to beyond@ign.com. And if you'd like more of our misadventures, you can follow both Colin and I on Twitter. Colin is no taxation, all one word. I am Pwam Cider, P-W-A-M Cider. And we generally tweet, I think we tweet pretty good stuff. I feel like you and I tweet just the right amount.
Yeah,
it's never too much.
Never too much.
But there's like a little, you know, a little bit a day that you get a little, you know, a little injection, a little dose of our personality.
Every once in a while, I like to say just totally egregious things.
Just really just fucking vulgar. So do you have any parting words, Cole?
No, just a happy and healthy Thanksgiving to everyone. Thank
yes.
you for listening, as always, to Podcast Beyond. We really appreciate it. We wouldn't be here without you guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you for making us the number one PlayStation podcast in the world.
In the world.
We owe all of that to you. We do this for you. So thank you. And that's it for me.
Excellent. Well, as we usually do, we end Podcast Beyond with a song from the community, and this one was sent in from Matt, who plays guitar and flute in a band, A Time for Burning, from Liverpool, England. And I don't want to read the whole email, but he describes this band as instrumental post-rock music.
Post-rock?
Which I thought was really interesting.
We're not post-rock.
Well, they are. Okay. They're after it. They're totally after it. He's obviously been listening to Beyond for a long time, and this song is called To Preserve You Would Be No Gain, To Destroy You Would Be No Loss. That was so
That's
great.
That's an amazing name.
It can be downloaded for free along with the rest of their album from atimeforburning.bandcamp.com. So this is from Matt. Thank you very much for sending in the song. This was a little heavy for me, but I'm just going to play it anyway because that name of that.
I still want to know what post-rock means.
Matt, write into beyond@ign.com and describe to Colin what you mean by post-rock.
Post-grunge, post-all that makes sense, but not post-grunge. Or post-rock, rather.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that ends Podcast Beyond episode 216. Join us next week when Greg Miller, our one and only leader, returns from his holidays, and we will continue all this PlayStation tomfoolery.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go get some fucking vulgar lunch, man.
Yeah,
Beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.